One of the exciting things about December is we get to bless our listeners as they bless us with some pretty cool premiums. If you give a donation of any amount to Family Life this month, guess what happens? It's pretty cool. Your donation is doubled. So that's incredible. That's the match. We have generous donors who said, I want to match anything that's given up to $2.5 million, which is crazy, which is amazing. And then we get to send you some gifts.
That's what I was going to say. And we want to send you two books just as a thank you. And the first one's a devotional by Katie Davis Majors called Our Faithful God Devotional. It's so good. It's just about God's unchanging character. And then we want to send you a second book. It's a children's book by Ruth Cho Simon. And it's called Home is Right Where You Are. And it's a kid's book that's gorgeously illustrated based on Psalm 23. And we want to send these to you if you give a donation of any amount. And let me just add, this isn't just about donations and giving you gifts and our thanks. We just want to say, we can't do this ministry without you.
Right.
We want to impact families. We want to impact marriages. We want to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. And we think and we know that family and marriage is one of the best ways that we can do that. And so see this as really a way that we can partner together to reach people for the kingdom of Jesus.
Really changing the world one home at a time. So if you'd like to jump in and do that, you can go to familylifetoday.com and send a donation there. Or you can give us a call at 1-800-358-6329.
Or you can mail us your donation at Family Life, 100 Lakehart Drive, Orlando, Florida, 32832.
But make sure you let us know you'd like your copies of Our Faithful God Devotional and Home is Right Where You Are. And let us just say thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
If you sacrifice to give, we want to bless you, but you will be a blessing not only to us, but to thousands and maybe millions of others that get to hear this program.
Amazima is the Luganda word for truth. And we want every family and every student that we encounter to know the truth of who Jesus is and who he created them to be, and that they do have a hope and a future far beyond an earthly hope. They have a hope and a future in heaven.
Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Ann Wilson.
And I'm Dave Wilson, and you can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today. So when you look at a picture of our guest family, it makes you stop and go, what is happening here?
Well, and some of our listeners, maybe you're like us, that you've heard about our guest and you're like, what in the world is happening? How could this woman do this?
Well, tell them who it is.
We have Katie
Davis.
Katie's
over there. She's smiling. She's afraid to even say anything.
Katie Davis Majors is with us today. Katie, we can't wait to talk to you because we're going to talk about these books, but we really want to hear your story, life story, because it's very unusual. So we're really excited that you're here. But
thank you.
Well, what I was talking about, when you talk about a family picture, seriously, when I go on the internet and I look you up, I'm like, what is happening? There's like, it looks like 100 kids. There's not 100 kids. How many?
15.
15 kids. And how did they all come to be a part of your family?
I moved over to Uganda. Actually, right after high school, I moved to Uganda. I thought I was going to do a gap year there, working, volunteering at an orphanage. Really just fell in love with Uganda, the people, the culture. They're so warm, so hospitable, so kind. I was also really overwhelmed by the need. I had never experienced such immense poverty and need. And as I was living at this orphanage and befriending all the kids that lived there, I came to realize that a lot of these children had family, They had living moms and dads and grandparents and relatives all right in that same community. And so by and large, in East Africa, children who live in an institution, they might not be completely abandoned by their family. Their family might not have died, but they send the children to live in an orphanage because they really believe that they'll have a better life there.
I didn't know that.
This is an old statistic, but about 85% of children in East Africa as a whole that live in institutional care have at least one living parent. The Ugandan government and the governments of the surrounding countries are actually doing a really good job trying to push for more foster care as opposed to institutions, just because, you know, research is showing that it is not beneficial to a child to grow up as one of 150 kids with just a few caretakers. And so that was the situation that I lived in.
Wait, take me back just for a second, because you're probably 18 or you're 18 years old.
I was.
You walk into this orphanage and you start spending your time with all these kids. Like, what did you feel when you realized this is how these kids are living over here?
I mean, I think I was simultaneously overwhelmed with love for these kids. I mean, they were just all so wonderful and so sweet. And I befriended them. I taught a little kindergarten class in the morning on the grounds of the orphanage. And then in the afternoon, I would just hang out with whoever was home from school. They got to be my friends, but I was also so saddened by the idea. I think my kind of American mindset or the stereotype I had in mind was that they had to live in this place because something bad had happened to their families. And so I was so saddened to hear them talk about parents and grandparents and even sometimes brothers and sisters that lived, you know, like a 10-minute walk from where we were. And the reason they couldn't live at home was just poverty. Their parents wanted them to eat three meals a day. They wanted them to be able to afford to go to school. School wasn't free. And so if you lived at the orphanage, you could get a sponsor from America and then you could go to school. And so parents were making this huge, unimaginable sacrifice to say, no, actually, you go live somewhere else so that you can have what is perceived as kind of a better life. It's just poverty that's kind of the hurdle for people. I just remember thinking, surely we can do something to make it so that they can live with their family all the time. And that's how the ministry I founded, Amazima, was started. There was a grandmother in the community who I had gotten to know at church, and she had twin five-year-olds that she was raising because her daughter had passed away. They were coming up on the age where they would need to start school, and she was thinking about asking the man who ran the orphanage if her girls could have a spot there. And I asked her, if I could help you, if I could somehow get the money to send the girls to school, maybe I could help out with the financial part of it. Would you want to keep the girls at home? And she just started crying and was like, of course, you know, I want to raise these girls. I want to raise them in their community, but I want them to have access to education and a future. So, you know, I'm 18 years old. I call my mom. I'm like, hey, I need $100. Look what we're going to do with it. My parents are huge advocates. I mean, obviously, they're incredible. They're the people who taught me about Jesus, about love and service and loving your neighbor as you love yourself. And so they had instilled that in me. And as I was telling them these stories, they were like, okay, we'll help. So they started telling friends and family, hey, if you give Katie $100, she can send kids to school and she can buy them food and she can help them out with medical care. I started sponsoring these two twin girls to go to school so that they could stay at home with their grandmother, live in their community with their siblings and their neighbors where they had grown up. And that same grandmother would say to me, hey, there's another family, you know, up the hill and over here and down the dirt path that their kids don't go to school at all. What do you think? And I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm on it. So within my first year of living in Uganda, I was raising money to send 40 children to school. I had my afternoons free every day. And so I would just walk to these people's homes. I would walk down these red dirt roads, and just the generosity of the people that I encountered was so mind-blowing. They would always invite me in. They would always prepare food for me. And these are people who, I mean, I grew up in a very affluent situation. These are people who I'm looking at thinking, you do not have enough. Mm-hmm. You do not have enough food to be sharing it with me. I mean, it took me a long time to learn to receive what people were trying to share with me because it didn't feel right. Just the hospitality and the warmth and the generosity that I received from these families was so incredible.
Are you just thinking, like, we can expect more from our kids? I'm just thinking as a parent, I'm thinking grandparents. I'm thinking, you're an 18-year-old girl.
Kid, you're a kid.
I am a kid, yeah. For sure. I think about it now and I'm like, what? What were you doing?
Go back through this, because how many did you sponsor?
So I was paying for 40 kids to go to school in the first year.
Sponsors from the United States.
I mean, it was just really organic, friends and family. I started writing a blog just as a way to keep the couple friends and family that were sending in money, just to keep them, give them a little update. I don't think people were using the term like viral back then, but essentially
it went viral.
A ton of people started reading my blog and they wanted to help and they wanted to send money. And I was, you know, again, a child, didn't know what to do with money, but I was like, hey, as long as the funds are coming in, I'm going to use it to help more people in my community. And so decided to kind of formalize the thing and was like, okay, this is going to be a nonprofit. You know, we have to have a good and legal way to be collecting the money and distributing it. As I really prayed and asked the Lord, like, what would you have this ministry be about? I kept coming back to the verse in John where it says, you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free. It's Jesus who says that. And I wanted that. I wanted these kids to not just have access to education and medical care and like their basic human needs. Of course, that was important. But more than that, I wanted them to know the gospel. I wanted them to know their worth and their value because of Jesus. And so Amazima is the Luganda word for truth. And our mission has remained just, we want every family and every student that we encounter to know the truth of who Jesus is and who he created them to be, and that they do have a hope and a future far beyond an earthly hope and a future, which we hope we're able to provide them through education, but far beyond that, they have a hope and a future in heaven. And so, yeah, we started meeting together. I had like, you know, a little tiny front porch, not much bigger than this table. And we would sit outside and we would study the Bible together. And we would make like a big pot of rice and beans so that we could share a meal together.
Who's we?
Myself and these 40 kids and some of their family members and whoever would.
Yeah.
In Uganda, most of life takes place outside. You cook outside, you eat outside, you do your laundry outside, you hang it up outside. And so you're kind of always in this space with your friends and your neighbors. And God has like so tremendously blown away any expectation that I ever had of what this ministry could be. It was always really important to me that these kids had like a direct relationship with somebody at Amazima, which of course at the beginning was just me. And then I hired a woman who had been translating for me in the kindergarten classroom where I was still volunteering some. And I said like, hey, in the afternoons when we're not doing that, can you come with me and translate for me in these homes and help me get to know these people? And so she was kind of, at first it was just me and her. And as we got more and more funds, we wanted to help more and more students. And so I began to hire other community members to kind of help keep track of all the logistics. And today, so this was, oh my goodness, almost 18 years ago. So fast forward today, we have two schools. We actually ended up building a couple really beautiful, really nice schools in the community to send our children to and to also invite other students from the community to come to. The school day in Uganda is very long. Kids leave super early in the morning and they come back really late at night. And it was really, again, important to us to have that relational component of the ministry. So every student is assigned a mentor who's an Amazima staff member. And their, you know, their goal is truly just to be a person who's continually checking in and continually pointing these students toward Jesus. There was a woman in my community when I was 15, 16, 17 years old, who was really just took an interest in me and started inviting me to go on walks and inviting me to study the Bible with her. And I had grown up in a believing home and I knew who Jesus was, but the way that this woman, Jenny, who mentored me, the way that she loved the word and the way that she talked about Jesus and to Jesus as if he was just, you know, right there in her living room, like her buddy or something. That was so transformational to my faith when I was very, very young. And so I want to make sure, and we at Amazima, it's a big part of our mission that these students are intentionally discipled
and it's one-on-one.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what's so crazy. I was thinking like 5-on-1 would even be good, but 1-on-1 is incredible.
They do. I mean, it's a mix. They have small groups where they meet, but they also have mentors who come and check on them in their homes and do 1-on-1 discipleship with them. And I think that's just super transformative in our faith to have someone older than us that we are looking up to and that's a little bit further down the road who can say like, you're going to make it. You're going to make it through this.
We always say to have somebody ahead of you, beside you, and behind you.
Yes.
You grow when you have that for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, what's amazing about your story, we've been to Africa and we come home.
Yeah.
A lot of people have gone on a mission trip and it's an awesome, you know, we went there for a week and even went into the bush outside Nairobi. It's incredible, but you go, you see a need. You're 18 years old and now you're, you know, in your 30s, but it's like, I can't just go home. We can do something. I mean, it's pretty powerful. So you know what? Every once in a while, I write a song for guests. So here we go.
This has never happened.
This has never happened.
Well, here's the thing. My producer actually gave me the idea because you probably don't know this, but there was an actress back in the 1930s named Betty Davis. You ever heard that name? And, you know, you got the same last name. And then in the 80s, I don't even know if you were born yet, there was a singer named Kim Carnes who did a song called Betty Davis Eyes. You ever heard it? So here's the song, but I changed the lyrics based on your story, sort of like this. Jim's in there smiling. She's got 500 kids. Now that ain't no lie. She loves each like Jesus. She's got Katie Davis eyes. She took a trip in high school. Uganda was a surprise. She felt called by Jesus with Katie Davis eyes. When he calls you, she's doing the drum beat. Katie Davis eye. We need Katie Davis eye.
That is the truth.
Wow.
Anyway, I mean, honestly, it's a joke, but you had something, this heart of compassion to see. Mm. And so I'm making a joke, but it is true. It's eyes. And again, you're not Katie Davis anymore. You're Katie Davis Majors. So when did you get married? Was it long after that?
Early 2015. We got married in January. So 8 years later.
But we have to go back to adopting these kids.
Oh, yeah.
Because
we skipped.
The
adoption process in Uganda is super long. So you start with foster care and then you have to foster a child for at least 3 years before you're even eligible to like submit adoption paperwork. And I fostered probably 40 kids. And sometimes that was more of a like, hey, let's get you healthy and back on your feet. Or, hey, let's help get your family situation healthy and stabilized. Or let's look for relatives within your community that you might be able to go and stay with. And those kids would go back and live with family. 7 different times, that was not an option. So my kids are sibling sets for the most part. Mm. And for various really hard, really devastating reasons. They didn't have family members that could take care of them. And so I ended up, you know, fostering them over a long period of time. I was fostering all 13 of our daughters, who we did end up adopting when I met my husband.
I mean, this story just keeps going. I can't imagine stepping into a life, marrying you, and then getting 15 kids. Yeah, that's cool. You know, and you're a great writer. I mean,
we have
your book, Our Faithful God, which is a 52-week devotional, as a gift to our listeners. If they give a gift to Family Life, especially this month in December, it's matched. So it's doubled.
Awesome.
So I just want to say to our listeners, give a gift this month. It'll be doubled. And we're going to send you Katie's book, Our Faithful God. Here's how you can give a gift. It's familylifetoday.com. Or you can give us a call, 1-800-358-6329. And I just found out this is how the best way to do it on your phone. Just go to 1-800, F is in family, L is in life, and the word today. And we'll send you Katie's book.
And Katie also has another book called Safe All Along, Trading Our Fears and Anxieties for God's Unshakable Peace. That's a really good subtitle. And we have that in our store, and you can get that at familylifetoday.com. But also, Katie, you've got this beautiful devotional that Dave just talked about, Our Faithful God, 52 weeks of leaning on his unchanging character. Each one is really probably special, but can you share one that has really stood out to you of one of these days?
Do not be afraid. It is the most often repeated command in all of Scripture. God must have known how quickly fear and anxiety slip into our hearts. Our minds so readily begin to spiral into worry. And before we know it, we are in a deep abyss of what ifs and what abouts. I am often surprised by how frequently I have to learn again not to be afraid, and by how quickly, just when I think I've got it mastered, I forget yet again. We read about how Abram gave up his right to the riches he plundered from the four eastern kings while saving Lot. He rejected the offer of instant wealth because he wanted God alone to receive all the glory when he finally inherits the land God has promised and becomes a great nation. I have a lot to learn here. Often, when I don't understand what God is doing, or when I feel that he is taking too long to come through on his promises, I'm inclined to take things into my own hands, to look for sufficiency and a solution elsewhere. But not Abram. He's far from home. He's getting old. He still has no children. But he trusts fully in the promise of God. And in reply to his faith, this clear show of trust, God says to Abram, "Do not be afraid. I am your very great reward." Genesis 15:1. God himself is what we are seeking. God himself is what we are longing for. God himself is what we need above all else. But among all these blessings that God gives, the very greatest reward he gives to Abram and to you and me is himself. It has been a great many years since God promised through Jesus that he was preparing a place for us to live eternally in heaven. Oh, how I long for the fulfillment of that promise. I long for the promised day when Jesus will restore us to himself and wipe away every tear from every eye. Yet in Abram's waiting and in our own, this is God's promise. He will be our shield, our exceedingly great reward. No matter how long we wait, no matter what sorrow or loss or heartache this world throws at us, God will still be God, and he will still be good, and he is enough for us. Life with him here and now, and life with him eternal, is our greatest hope, our greatest reward.
I mean, what a great thought, especially this month. The craziness of life. Christmas is awesome, but man, oh man, it's easy to put your hope in gifts.
Yeah.
Or even family members.
Yeah, expectations, yes. Right? Of what it's going to look like. I was having that conversation with a friend. It can get so lost.
Yeah, and again, let me just remind you, send a gift to Family Life, and we'll send you Katie's book. You'll get 52 of those. You just heard one. Just go to familylifetoday.com and make a gift there. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have Katie Davis Majors back with us again, so we'll see you then on Family Life Today.
Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.